God, we have before us on the pages of your book an amazing individual by the name of Joseph. And everything about him that is amazing is there because you put it within him. His life, as we examine it, bears all the fingerprints of God. Lord, as we study, I pray that we would find insight into this individual's life with you as we track his journey, and that our insights that we gain would become very practical insights for our own life and thus applied to the journey we are on with Jesus Christ. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. The title of this message is Growing Strong in Suffering. Growing Strong in Suffering. We are studying the life of Joseph. This is our fourth look at his life, and we are learning many things. I think one of the main things you learn by studying the life of Joseph is found in Proverbs 19:21. Let me read it to you. It says, "There are many plans in a man's heart." Many plans in a man's heart. "Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand." The NIV renders it, "There are many plans in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the purpose of the Lord will prevail." Joseph, when he was just a teenager, set his heart to seek the Lord. Teenage years are the years in which we begin to dream. We begin to dream about what our life will be. In high school, as a teenager, you are badgered by all the influences around you as to what you're going to do with your life. And you have to make the decision on where you're going to go to college, what you're going to major in, and all of that. And so, in the teenage years, the plans begin to formulate. Joseph, no doubt, had his plans formulating in his teenage years, and as he was seeking God, God gave him a vision when he was 17 years old. He shared that vision with his father, with his mother, and his brothers, and as a result, he was sold into slavery. And in a moment of time, all of his plans were stripped from his life. He didn't have to go through the trials and problems and question marks that many of us have to go through. Should I have this in my life or should I not have this in my life as a Christian? I don't mean ungodly things, I just mean things. Is this what I should be doing now for the Lord, or does the Lord have something else that he wants me to do? That whole process that we have the freedom to exercise, so many of us, that actually can hold us back in the long run. Joseph did not have that freedom. In a strange sort of way, God took it away and sent him on a journey that left Joseph's life dependent on God. So that in order to remain sane, you might say, beyond that, in order to remain happy, in order to become fulfilled, he would have to make the main thing in his life the main thing for his life. And the main thing in his life was God. So throughout his life, he made the main thing the main thing. I would encourage you, if you have never made that transition, to make the main thing the main thing. That will involve searching your heart daily, as Paul said in writing to the Corinthians, to see if you be in the faith. Not yesterday, but today. Searching your heart to see if you be doing what is the purpose of the Lord. Searching your heart to see whether or not you've been grasping after your plans or whether or not you are allowing the Lord to work his purpose down into your life, letting his purpose prevail or letting his counsel stand and become a reality in your life. Ultimately, that is where God wants to take all of us. In some ways, Joseph had it a lot worse than we do. In some ways, he had it a lot easier because God simplified his life to make the main thing early on. Now, so far, we have seen the plot against Joseph where his brothers sought to eliminate him from their lives. We've seen the perversion of Judah, one of his brothers, and we saw great grace abounding there. Where sin did abound, grace did overflow. We have seen the priest and his wife, where Joseph lived the life of at the house of Potiphar, and learned many things while he lived there. He rose from being a menial slave to becoming the man who was in charge of everything that Potiphar had, which was a lot. Thus, that would mandate Potiphar teaching him many things to be able to do and oversee and think like Potiphar, who was a man who had great wealth and was in charge of many things and one of the men close to Pharaoh. Therefore, Potiphar's house, if you've never seen it before, was in fact a school for Joseph. He began to learn what we would call the king's English. He began to learn the king's Egyptian. It would be absolutely necessary when he ascended to be prime minister of Egypt that he spoke the king's Egyptian. I am convinced that there in the house of Potiphar, as he was going about his duties, Potiphar was always correcting him on his Egyptian. Potiphar was a successful man. Potiphar was supposed to be sent from Ra, the god Ra. That's what his name means. That's what his position was. Thus, he would have been a copious individual, and Joseph would have to begin to learn Egyptian because now he lives in Egypt, and he would be learning the king's Egyptian. So that when he became royalty, he could conduct himself for the maximum glory of God in a proper way, comport himself in ways that only God could have made possible by learning them, those ways, while living at a royal man's house. Isn't it amazing how God can work all things together for the good? Now we come to the point where Joseph has been thrown in prison because he wouldn't give in to the temptation brought his way daily by Potiphar's wife. He refused to commit adultery, and as a result, he finds himself in prison. One of the conundrums of the Christian life is we can offer our God to the Lord and take our holiest steps and find ourselves in the greatest suffering we have ever known as a result. And yet, again, God is at work all the while. So as Joseph goes to the prison, God goes into the prison with him. That's the first thing that I want you to see. We see Joseph found God working in his life in the prison. Look at Genesis 39:20. Then Joseph's master took him, that would be Potiphar, and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison. Verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph. So Joseph finds that the Lord has gone into prison with him. And he is there with him. The Lord was with Joseph, and he showed him mercy. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. This is not unlike what he did in the house of Potiphar. He is working in his life. He is elevating Joseph. He is continuing to do what he wants to do in the life of this man. It is almost as if the same thing happened with the head of the prison as happened with Potiphar. He saw the difference in the character of Joseph's life. As a result, Joseph rose to prominence, handpicked by the keeper of the prison to end up running the prison for the prison keeper because the hand of the Lord was on him, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. He stood out. Like when you go to the jeweler and he puts a diamond or a fine jewel out to show you, what kind of a background does he put it on? Black. Here in the black background of his circumstances in his life and of the prison, he stood out so much that he ends up being asked by the prison keeper to run the prison for him. And no doubt he had selfish motives in there. You know, I could have a lot of kickback time if I have this honest guy who's so talented run the operation for me. In fact, he'll make me look good in front of Pharaoh. I'll have the finest run prison in the land. And I'm sure he had those ideas. But it was because of his character. So God is with him in the prison, verse 2. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, almost identical to the words found when he was at Potiphar's house. Why? Because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So here is Joseph. He goes into Potiphar's house. He learns all kinds of talents and abilities that are mandatory to be able to run all of the household of a man with servants and wealth. He learns the language. Now he is in prison. Now he goes from living with royalty to living with criminals. God has schooled him in royalty, comporting himself with royalty. Now God is schooling him on the darker side of life. May I say that God is without question schooling him on the injustices that are prevalent in this land run by this Pharaoh. He's getting an inside look at the kingdom that he would not have otherwise, and that is going to serve him well in the days to come when he will be prime minister running the kingdom in his mind and his heart for the glory of God, to run it justly, to run it honestly. So he's learning things he would have never known otherwise. Meanwhile, he is still speaking Egyptian, and I am convinced he came to the point where he thought in Egyptian. When you truly learn to speak a different language, you know that you have really learned it when you begin to think in that language. When you're in that land, you think in that language. And I'm convinced after God was all done with this prison time with Joseph, he thought in Egyptian. He would have to do that in order to accomplish in the way that he did the role of being prime minister later of the entire country. God is amazing the way he works. It has been well said that if the Lord controls us, it makes very little difference who commands us. And that is the case in the life of Joseph. God controlled his life. It made very little difference then who commanded him, because ultimately the purpose of the Lord prevailed. The key is to let God control your life. And I think that the other thing is, what kept him going is that Joseph has a gift, divinely given, of understanding dreams, right? In fact, he no doubt probably had the nickname Dreamer or something like that, because word would get out and people would know he's in this prison. The way the story goes, it goes back to these dreams he had originally. He has the ability to interpret dreams and so on. And that comes to be a reality in the next few verses. But what I want to say before we move into that is that I think that what sustained Joseph through all of this, I mean, he lost control of his life a long time ago, and what sustained him in all of this was the original vision that God had given him. He was able to interpret dreams from God. Don't you think he was able to interpret his own dream, the one that got him sent on this path so long ago? And yet, that dream once bestowed, that vision given to him, we don't find any record of God appearing to him every day, giving him the vision all over again. I believe what sustained him is that God had clearly shown him what he was going to do with his life, and then whether God was really talking to him or not, he stood on that year after year after year, believing that God in his time would be faithful. And we need to learn how to do that, because God will speak to you. God will speak to you very, very clearly. He'll speak to you so clearly that you know that if you don't respond, you will be disobedient to the God of heaven. And then what God will do, this is very, very typical of God, is that he will become silent after that. You march forward in obedience to what he's shown you, and then he becomes silent. And he has you then walk by faith. You have to then fall back on the fact that what he showed you was so clear that you knew it was him, that you will not detour your course, no matter how hard it gets or no matter how strange it gets in the days to come, believing that God, having spoken clearly in the past, will speak clearly again in the future. We have no record of God speaking to him at all here. so far. So Joseph found God with him. His hand is on him. But we have no record of new visions or anything like that from the Lord. The other thing is that Joseph encountered more dreams in the prison. And here is where the importance of not getting bitter becomes very real in his life. Let's read it. In verse 1, it came to pass after these things, chapter 40, came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them. So they were in custody for a while. Time goes by. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. Verse 6, and Joseph came into them in the morning, and he looked at them, and he saw they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers, who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? And they said to him, we have each had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. I find that fascinating and wonderful. Do not interpretations belong to God? He points them straight to God. And then he says, tell them to me, please. This sheds a lot of light on what is going on in his heart. As the years are going by, it tells us that Joseph refused to become bitter and cynical about dreams and their interpretation. Now get this. Everything bad that has happened to him in his life has come about because of dreams and interpreting them. It stands to reason that being human, he would get to the point where he'd say, you know what, I've had a lot of bad experiences because of dreams and interpretations. Now here come a couple of guys who have had some dreams and they want the interpretations. I think I'll just let them go. I have enough problems of my own because of dreams. But the amazing thing is he did not develop an attitude about dreams and their interpretation at all. And you know something, if he did, he would have missed out on so much of what God had waiting for him later. He had what I would like to call a Joseph response. Can I give you a gift today? It's those three words, a Joseph response. In your life, as you face the various things that come your way, make it your habit, start today, to react with a Joseph response. May God grant us all the Joseph response from this day forth in our lives. He did not become bitter or cynical about dreams and their interpretation. And so many of us, when things don't go our way, we become bitter. We become upset. We get an attitude. We back off. And then we use it to live on a low level. We use it as an excuse. Things happen that don't really agree with us. Things happen to us as Christians that make us upset. Then we drop out of whatever it is we're doing for the Lord, and we then begin to live on a very low level. And our excuse for living on that low level is, these bad things happen to me. You will not find that in the life of Joseph. I can tell you in my own life, I've allowed it to happen along the way. I've allowed it to happen to me along the way in the ministry, where there was a point in time in my life where just dealing with all of the things that go on in the ministry, I just let it get to me. So I dropped out. I simply dropped out. And when I dropped out, I said to the Lord, Lord, I know that I'm called, and I also know what your people are like. So you know something, Lord? I'm out. And I know, and you know that I'm called, and I just want to let you know, I no longer care. So goodbye. I'm going to go do my thing. I'm going to read my Bible. and I'll go to church. But as for the ministry and as for the calling to preach the word, you can have it because I've had it with your people. They're driving me out of my mind. So I walked away from the ministry for 3 years. That was a wrong response. That was not a Joseph response. In Ephesians 4:31 through 32, it says, "Get rid of all bitterness and anger, brawling and slander, along every form of malice, and be kind and compassionate one to another, forgiving each other just as Christ forgave you." You see, if you allow bitterness to begin to develop in your heart, it'll take over your life. And it'll pull you away from God. In Hebrews 12:14 it says, "Pursue peace with all men and holiness, looking diligently lest anyone should fall short of the grace of God, and lest any root of bitterness springing up inside of you cause trouble. And by this few be defiled." Now it doesn't say few. By this, it says, many are defiled. In other words, it's a very common thing for Christians to allow bitterness to develop in their heart and to defile them. But in the case of Joseph, rather than the dealings of God making him bitter, they made him better. He did not turn against God, but he turned to God more than he ever had before. The importance of not getting bitter. It is so clear here. And the importance, another thing I see here, is the importance of continuing to give even in the midst of suffering. Continuing to give even in the midst of suffering. To me, this really warms my heart. Because suffering makes your heart cold all too often. And yet, in verse 6, we read, "Joseph came into them in the morning, and he looked at them, and he saw that they were sad." Let me ask you a question. Why was it that this man who'd been ripped out of his house, stripped of his right to be the heir of the family, taken from all of the wealth that involved and the lifestyle he had lived, and why would this man then, on top of that, who had been so wrongly accused and put into prison, why would this man come into the prison and be able to see beyond himself and his own problems, which were gigantic, to notice that a couple of guys were sad? How could that be? This guy has problems that are gigantic, injustices that would cause anybody to be completely preoccupied. How does he come into the prison and notice that two men are sad? Especially the fact that they're in prison. You think prison's a happy place? What do you think an average day would be like in prison? Sad. I'm in prison. I'm sad. It's not like it's the glad bunch in prison. So, you know, it's just another day in one sense. And yet, he notices that two individuals are sadder than normal. How is it he's able to see that? I'll tell you how. Because he didn't have his eyes on himself. He understood the secret of giving to others, even though he himself was suffering. What a secret that is to learn. He saw that they were sad. In verse 7, so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody there, "Why do you look so sad today?" And they said to him, "We each have had a dream, and there's no interpreter of it." Isn't that right? Yeah, that's right. Isn't that right, Butler? Yeah, that's right, Baker. You know, I think these guys were friends. Butler and Baker would stand to reason. They worked together for the king, right? Plus, they're thrown into prison together. So they know each other. So they both have a dream, and they're hanging out, and they're comparing notes, and here he comes. And he ministers to them. It is a great, great spiritual secret. And I pray that we can all learn it. To be able to give while we are yet suffering. In fact, Isaiah 58:6 says that part of the answer to spiritual dryness and spiritual sinfulness, is to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke that you can, and to share your bread with the hungry. He goes on in Isaiah 58, verse 8, to say, "Then your light will break forth like the morning, and your healing shall spring forth speedily. And your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard." That's straight out of the Word of God, that healing comes through the process of giving. The other thing that we see here is it's only two guys. And that underscores the importance of faithfulness in the little things of life. Faithfulness in the little things of life. When you survey the whole story, this becomes staggering, because it positions him for what lies ahead, the most important things in his life. In verse 9, the chief butler told his dream to Joseph, and he said to him, "Behold, now in my dream, a vine was before me." Now just get the picture. Here's the butler, and he's got the full attention of Joseph. Right next to him is the baker, who's watching this whole thing, because he's on deck for his interpretation. He's going to see how it goes with his friend the butler, and then he's going to step up and he's going to have his audience and get his interpretation. So he's getting all eager now as Joseph gets into his interpretation mode. You know, he's listening, and you can see, And so the baker's over there going, "Ooh, this is pretty cool. I can't wait for my turn." So the chief butler told his dream to Joseph, and he said to him in verse 9, "Behold, in my dream, a vine was before me. And in the vine, there were three branches. It was as though it budded. Its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup. And I placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." There you have it. That's my dream. And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler." Can you imagine how excited the butler is? "All right, I am out of here. And I'm going to be back in the palace." And so the baker, just imagine how he feels. "Okay, you know what? This is looking good. Okay, way to go, butler. All right, let me have my turn. We're going to both be in the palace. Wow." And so we read on. Joseph says, very interesting thing in verse 14. "All I ask of you, Mr. Butler, is this. Remember me when it's well with you. Please show kindness to me and make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away. You must know my story. I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon." More insight into where they're at, what the nature of the prison is. "All I ask is that I have answered your dream. I've told you what's up. You know what's coming. I've lowered your anxiety level down to zero, and I've raised your joy level to maximum level. Now you just remember me and let the king know I'm in here, and the false charges against me brought me here. They're not true." Now, chief baker, it's his turn. Verse 16, "When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, 'I also was in my dream. And there were three white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket, there were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh. And birds ate them and ate them out of the basket on my head.'" Now, Joseph has the interpretation. It's a divine gift. He knows what it means, and he knows it's bad. So, in a millisecond, he has to make a decision. He has to make the decision, do I water it down? Do I tell him the truth, knowing that the truth is going to hurt so bad? having just seen the exuberance and the joy of his friend with the interpretation of his dream, do I shatter his hopes and ruin his day and hurt his heart by telling him the truth because this truth is going to hurt? Or do I water it down? Tell him everything's going to be okay. And he had to make a decision not to water down the truth, even though it was going to hurt. In verse 18, so Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you. Oh my gosh, the butler says, that's awful. Baker, you're ruined. I'm going to miss you. I can't bear to watch the birds eat your flesh. And it's like, shut up. I'm going to die. You mean I'm going to die then? That's the interpretation of my dream. Yes. But you know something? I believe that when Joseph made the decision not to water down the message that this man was going to die and knew his truth was going to hurt, I believe he also made the decision to tell him where he could go after he died if he would believe upon the God who had given him the interpretation and the truth. In other words, knowing Joseph, I believe he told him the truth and it hurt, and then he said, but let me tell you how to find your way to paradise. If you will believe my words, the words of God, my saving God, if you will believe the message I'm about to give you, if you will believe upon the saving God whom I serve, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, my fathers, you will die, yes, but you will be taken to paradise, to Abraham's bosom, as the Bible calls it. And there you will await the hand of God until the Messiah comes. And he will then take you with all the others that have believed upon this God to heaven. There's no doubt in my mind that he chose not to hold back the truth, told the man he was going to die, then told him how to go to heaven when he did die. And that is the choice every one of us has to make. Sometimes we know the truth is going to hurt. We don't do anybody any favors by holding back the truth that hurts, especially if we hold back the way to heaven and they die without that truth and they don't go to heaven. And we could have pointed the way, but instead we watered it all down to make it easy on them for the moment, and yet we made it harder on them for eternity in the process. I thank God for this man, Joseph. In verse 20, it says, now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. Then he restored the chief butler to his butlership again. And he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. So Joseph is thrown into prison. He finds God in prison with him. He encounters more dreams in the prison and he finds God giving him the interpretation. Another thing that I see happening here is that Joseph had growth of character while he was in the prison itself. He grew through the suffering of the prison itself. See, Joseph goes along and time goes by, but he continues to grow in his character. You might think, well, he didn't suffer that much. He was put in charge of the prison. Oh, but we know that he did suffer. Hold your place and turn in your Bible to Psalm 105 to verse 17. The psalmist gives us some insight into what happened to Joseph and some of the pain he went through that we are not given in Genesis. Psalm 105, verse 17. It says, he sent a man before them, and that is Joseph. And he was sold as a slave. And they heard.